Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
Hello, I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife,
the show where we help you through the midlife, the menopause, motherhood, and everything in between.
This week, we're going to be challenging ourselves to step out of our comfort zones, discussing why now is the perfect time to be more adventurous in life.
Yes, and we have a very special guest today who has done just that. We have broadcaster and journalist Kate Garraway, who flew the flag for midlife women in the Celebrity Jungle last year. We love that programme as a family. We watch it every year. We interviewed Kate for this podcast live at last week's Life Lessons Festival, and you can hear what she has to say about resetting her life at 52 in just a little while.
We're also going to be tackling the parenting horror that is sibling rivalry, sharing our own experiences as well as some expert tips on how to manage the situation. First, though, we're going to have a chat about morning routines. We're quite obsessed.
How do you begin your day, Trish?
Well, I'm quite an early riser because I like to potter in the morning.
Oh, I can imagine you pottering.
I like to kind of have the time to do a few little chores, get the kids up and just sort of get my mind in gear before I leave the house.
But do you look at your phone when you first wake up?
No, I'm quite good at that.
No, I do see.
Yeah, you see, I bet you're a look at your phone.
FOMO.
Everything in a rush, getting out the door, super efficient. Is that right?
No. I used to be like that. I look back now and think I must have been incredibly irritating for everybody because all my energy is in the morning. By 8:30 at night, I've obviously got to go to bed. But all the energy is in the morning. I used to leap up, run around. But 15 years of having children, sort of, because you don't actually have any sleep at the night, took that out of me. But I do now. I have learned to get up a little bit earlier to have some time on my own, have a massive glass of water, get that out of the way at the beginning of the day, think about what I'm going to have for breakfast, and then I have time to engage with them at the kitchen table rather than just
they're not very communicative though, really, are they? Let's face it, first thing, they're a bit
basically I just hug the little one because she's still giving me the love in the morning. That's she still wakes up joyous and jolly. Nip into her bedroom, give her a big old cuddle, wake her up, she's really pleased to see me. Go into the 16-year-old, not so pleased to see me, doesn't want to be woken up. A little bit rude to me sometimes.
Yeah.
We did a really great feature last year in Style about very successful women and how they started their day. And, you know, it's kind of true. They really do start very early and they're really on it. Danny Cotton, who was commissioner of the London Fire Brigade, would get up at 4:30, feed the cats. She herself will be fed and watered and out the door by 5:15 a.m. and straight in to work. It's extraordinary, isn't it? I think it does set you up for the day, but I think some people find it, they're not larks, they're owls.
Yeah, but I think I'm definitely a lark. But I think the thing for me about the sort of pottering is the sort of getting my head together, being able to kind of think about what's coming up in the day, and also a sort of an element of control. And actually, before I had kids,
there we are, Trish.
I used to do this really weird thing. When I think about it now, it's like, what was I thinking? I used to go around the house and make sure every room looked perfect. So I'd go into each room, I'd plump the pillows on the sofa. Can you even imagine doing that now?
I mean,
insane.
Can kind of see you doing it.
You can see me doing it, but not now with the kids and the dog and the cat.
Probably have stopped you had I been there. Then what the hell are you doing? Life might be too short.
Life is too short. And then can I tell you one more part of my little routine?
Go on.
Is that commuting, as we know, commuting in London is pretty hideous.
Stressful.
It has to say, it's so hideous. And I do this little, I give myself a mental pat on the back when I've made it through my journey. And I sort of say to myself, well done, Trish, you did that. Well done. Give myself. Coming out of the tube
station. The force is strong with this one, isn't it?
I know, I know.
I think you have to just kind of tell yourself to be really jolly happy in the mornings as well, because it's quite tiring with I have to get four children out of the door. We used to do three school runs, one of which was so tightly timed, I ended up running up a hill with a massive buggy, which we don't have to do anymore, thank God. Thank anyone out there in the middle of the early childhood, early school years, it does get easier.
So it's time to hear our interview with Kate Garraway.
So welcome, Kate.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much.
I guess we should start by asking you about your midlife journey and about this idea of being courageous and adventurous and finding a new spirit in your life. How has that happened for you?
Well, I had children relatively late. 38 with Darcy and 42 with Billy. I know it's more usual now, but relatively late in the sort of history of childbirth. So I think when I was 42 and 43, when you've got you're breastfeeding a baby on your lap, you have a sort of delayed sense of where you are in midlife. So when I got to 48 and 49, my husband thinks I'm barely midlife now. He thinks I'm limboing under the line because I'm coming out the top. But I still think I thought I was a 20-year-old, really. And then I approached a sort of 48, 49, and suddenly you see that number 50 charging at you, and you think, oh my goodness, that really feels like a halfway point. And then you think, actually, that would be a halfway point if I was incredibly lucky.
Yes.
It's probably over the edge. And you know people who have, you know, dealing with all sorts of life-threatening issues like breast cancer, some of them fighting them brilliantly and coming out the other side with great stories, others of them not. And so suddenly your brain is focused to maybe it's kind of downhill from here. And I thought, gosh, that is quite depressing. Am I sort of charging towards the negative aspects of old age? Sometimes I think old age we revere as this wonderful kind of sunny uplands where we've achieved everything we want to do. And, you know, we're just running around and we think, well, actually, if I don't take steps now, then I'm not going to have those sunny uplands. So then I turned 50 and thought, well, downhill from here should be great, because downhill doesn't have to be bad. It could be a gentle glide to wonderfulness, yes, couldn't it? So I thought, well, I'll do some of the good things that I've learnt, taking care of myself, reviewing things. And then, of course, life is crazy. You suddenly find yourself with a teenager.
Yes, it's busy.
Exactly. And if you want to have more excitement in your life, then you're actually taking on more things. And you think, well, goodness me, I just want to be comfy. I found myself thinking all the time. There was a brilliant thing that was running around on Instagram, various social medias, that made me laugh and think that's sort of where I was pre-jungle, which is they used to say 30 was a new 20 and 40 was a new 30 and 50 is a new 35, or all of these numbers. All I know is, for me, midnight is now 9 p.m.
Yes.
And that is basically what you want, isn't it? Your sole goal is, how can I have as comfortable time as possible and be in bed as early as possible?
In my pyjamas.
So I can start in my comfy, yes, pyjamas. Start over again. And then I had been lucky enough to be approached by the team at ITV that make I'm a Celebrity, and thought, why would anybody want to do that?
But didn't your daughter say to you?
It was my daughter. Yeah.
So I've always been so comfy
for years and years and years. Why would you want to do that? You'd be hungry. You wouldn't be allowed to wear any makeup. I mean, imagine anything more horrific. You couldn't have a blow dry. You have to do really horrific things that are very, very frightening. And she said, oh, you should do that because, you know, Mum, you're fundamentally very boring. No.
See what I mean about teenagers?
Yeah, I was like,
building your self-esteem day by day.
Exactly, exactly. That shifted, because I think the other thing that you think about when you're a mum and when you're being a responsible adult is, I can't leave my family, I can't leave my children. And suddenly I thought, actually, they would like me to do that. And I think that is, they would like me to leave them. But also I think you suddenly realise that you're a different kind of mother in midlife. You're a mother that they actually perhaps don't need minute by minute pureeing of food like they did when they were toddlers.
No.
They actually need a different sort of relationship with their parents.
How did you feel about, while you were there, all the challenging bits? Were you kind of taking that on board and thinking, I'm going to take this feeling home and I'm going to keep it with me?
I am not a brave person and I don't see the need to do things that inspire adrenaline. Why does anybody want to jump out of a plane? I don't understand it. Why does anybody want to be scared? Life is terrifying.
Or wear
Life
a bikini.
Life is really
on
terrifying.
Telly. I don't think I'd ever wear a bikini on.
Well, that was probably the scariest thing
that
of all.
Like the most.
For everybody.
Throw me out of an aeroplane, but don't make me wear a bikini on live telly.
Exactly. One of the things I'd always spouted is the great thing about being older is you don't have to do stupid things. You can wear control underwear and feel comfortable about it. Why, you know, you don't have to worry about having the perfect six pack. And why would you basically want to be in a bikini on television? But what I found in there is a very strange thing, that actually I realized that I've been seeking the easiest possible option in life. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think doing stupid things is not being a teenager. And don't purposely try new things. But if you only seek comfort, then actually what you're beginning to lose is the thrill that you had in your 20s of the world opening up.
What was the most terrifying thing? Because you seem to do quite a lot of terrifying things, I thought, on the show.
I do think that the walking out on the plank was terrifying. I mean, it was a very windy day. Ant and Dec were visibly disturbed by the wind. And everything in your body says, don't walk out, climb down ladder and walk out. So I felt very shocked by that, but also elated. And then incrementally, everything they encourage you to do is challenging yourself. Dealing with a lack of food is challenging with us. Dealing with not knowing anybody before you go in is difficult. And having to form a community with strangers is difficult. And I think I came out thinking that actually shaking yourself up, taking away everything like phones, contact with people that you've grown to trust as you built up over the years, and having to form new relationships. And then the challenge, of course, has been to keep doing that in real life.
And have your children been proud of you? Have they been impressed? Do they think they call you brave mum?
There's that brilliant mixture of horror and pride.
Must be quite embarrassing.
So, so my daughter said, oh, when you swam to the shore so slowly, that was the worst day of school. Because I had to go to school and everyone was saying, your mum's rubbish at swimming. And I said, but can you not remember all the other good things, please? So she did write me a very sweet note afterwards where she said I was her hero in everything other than my dress sense, which I think is exactly really what a teenager should say, isn't it? Because they have to be completely appalled. But yes, I think they are a little. Bit, I think they are maybe a little bit prouder.
Certainly watching it, as we were all watching it, women of our age, you were a bit of, you became a hero for us. You were a pin-up midlife woman. Well, especially, yes, when Miles was talking about how hot you were and how sexy you were.
Oh, well, that was marvellous.
But I think women lose that in midlife. You become slightly invisible and men don't look at you in the same way, and you still think you're 17, you can't quite work out why no one's flirting with you anymore. It's bizarre. So, but you were really kind of flying the flag. There were lots of discussions around it. While you were in there. How do you feel about that? Do you think, did your age feel part of it for you, particularly around the...
I think there was a really interesting moment when Miles said, Miles was all the time saying, I fancy Kate, come here, KG, and all this stuff. I thought, oh, bless him, he's so charming. And it's like, it's his charity work. Making older women feel good. And then...
Nothing wrong with that.
There was an extraordinary... Yes, exactly. It's a very laudable charity work. And then there was a very interesting moment in the camp when he said, I've been out with people Kate's age and older. And everybody, particularly people I remember, were like, what? What? And he was like, yeah, why wouldn't you? And we were like, I was like, would you really? I was very excited at this point. would you really? And my husband's here, by the way, just in case you think I'm revealing something too much. And he said, yeah, why not? He said, because young men have youth. So why do you think that's what they care about? That's what older women prize because they fear they've lost it. What we care about is sex appeal, interesting conversations, you know, and the way the woman moves and the confidence they have. I'm not sure I've got any of those things either, by the way, but that's a worry. But that's what we're interested in. It said older women think that young men are interested in youth because very often their experiences, older men talk about young women a lot.
Oh, that makes sense.
And actually, we don't care about it anywhere near as much as you think we do.
I thought that was just brilliant news.
For to be honest, as did a lot of other people in camp too.
Trish will be updating her Tinder profile later on, changing the age setting of the men she wants to meet. So you, Trish, though, in terms of having that adventure, you were telling me, and we often talk about it on the podcast, that you've started doing new things.
New strange things.
Yes, because you're quite controlled as a person.
Well, I'm a very organised, very controlled. I think we get to a point in life where we have a story about ourselves that we tell. We have a narrative, and that is who we are. Mm. And that is what we believe, and that's what we think, and that's what we try and portray to people. And I thought, I want to do something that disrupts that and isn't about that. And I've got one of these husbands who's incredibly good at, he flies, he sails, he can navigate, he can do all of those things. And
brave,
I just,
Neil.
And I just like useless at all of that. Or that is the story that I've told myself. So I thought, right, I'm going to kind of go out there and see if I can do this. So I'm learning to sail, and I can use a compass all these years. That's not very glamorous.
I think really interesting though, isn't it? Because you're absolutely right. That's what I think I mean about seeking comfort, that we tell ourselves we are that sort of person because we've done things that we didn't like very much. And so we seek a course down a route, and that becomes who we are. And actually, it doesn't have to be, does it? Like, even though I'm a scared person and I did these things, even though I was often last, usually last, I actually did lots more than I ever thought I would, and lots more than anybody around me thought I would. And then you start thinking, well, actually, then I can do these things, can't I? And then life suddenly becomes more of a choice and less of a closing down. And new things come to you that you can then do. And I think that's the challenge of midlife, isn't it? To reset your life in a direction that you want, rather than just feeling like you're in an ever-disappearing circle, really. Yeah.
And how has your midlife journey been anyway? A lot of the women that have contacted us and women we've had on the podcast have talked about everything changing around the age of 45, both physically, but more importantly, emotionally. Mm. How has it been for you generally?
Dreadful, I'm a husk. No, I mean, there is a phrase, isn't there? 45 and on the slide. And physically, yes. Things do go down.
Yeah, that's a bit depressing.
Don't they, from 45
is it depressing?
Onwards?
I don't know. Maybe it's not depressing. I don't like the middle bit, but...
No, I think you do. I think what we all maybe are guilty of, and we women have to try and look at that, is the first effects of getting older are physical to us. We look in the mirror and think, oh my God, look at those wrinkles, look at this, look at the state of this. And so therefore we start addressing the outward appearance as a first step. So we start thinking about trying to look younger rather than thinking about how to feel better at this age. And if you start thinking all the time about how to trying to look younger and get back the things from that time, then I don't think you really move forward. So I think it's a question of thinking about what's going to make me feel better.
If you're a woman maybe thinking about doing something different making a big change or going through a different, what advice would you give, having been through this journey in the last year? What would you look back and think, I should have thought of that before I went into the jungle, or maybe there is the kind of urge to just rip the plaster off.
Rip the plaster off. So I was lucky that the jungle was a big jolt, but I think that you can get that by taking some of the things that I felt I learned. I definitely felt like having a strong community around you and thinking about what makes you happy in terms of the people around you is very important.
So looking at who you already have in your life.
Trying to remember what you love about it. I mean, one of the things about being away from me is I did find that I realised I actually still quite like my husband, which beforehand, if you'd heard us, you might have been, because you get into a routine, weren't you, where actually you're doing the business of life and you're forgetting why you love the friends you have and why you love the people around you. So remembering to connect with them, I think, is really important, and to make time for that. I think as well, taking time to make yourself feel good is going to make your life work better. in lots of different ways. And I do think challenging yourself is really key. I think that going forward and challenging yourself in lots of different ways is really key, because what that does is help you to adjust what your happiness dial is and where that is. Finding your joy really is something that I think that you really have to take notice of, in a way that in your 20s, it's sort of coming at you anyway. So I think you have to take notice of finding your joy, taking space to and thinking about things. It's a good time to do a bit of a check-in with yourself, isn't it, midlife?
And has it made you, do you think, a better parent? Because you've got teenage, you're 13, so you've got teenage coming at you. Do you think it made you, Kate's written a piece for us in the magazine, but you talk about taking that moments to sit with your kids, which you probably didn't do before.
I think what it is trying to stop the to-do list playing in your head when you're having moments, whether it be with your husbands or your friends or even one of the people on your to-do list. And so, you know, we have to really sort of plan our days, don't we? So my son is obsessed with Star Wars and, you know, will literally talk for days about different Sith Lords. I have no idea what he's talking about. It's like it's talking Mandarin.
Love Star Wars.
Do you love it?
Love it. You could pop over.
Yes. Yeah, you'd be great. You're very helpful. But that's what's important to him. So it's thinking, rather than doing that thing we all do it. And there is an element of going, how was school? How are you? Thinking, this is his moment. I'm just going to pause the to-do list for a minute. And I've actually started on occasion putting an alarm in my phone and think, I haven't really got an hour and a half, but I probably have got 10 minutes. And I'm going to put an alarm in my phone, which sounds like a phone call, and say, well, no, let's talk about this. I'll do it for 15 minutes. And so I'll sit and not think about anything else other than him for that 15 minutes and then put the alarm on and say, Bill, I am going to have to just take this call. And I've generally find that he, by that point, is coming out of the need to speak.
And he's got it all off his chest.
He's got a lot of it off his chest, and we've had a little chat, and then he gets it. Mm. Rather than doing perhaps what I was doing before, which is like, oh God, I definitely want to do that, but I'm just going to put the chips on, and I'm just going to do this, and I'm just going to do this, and I'm just going to send this email. And then I can go back and do those other things. I like to do it before, and it's not also not feeling guilty if it's not possible. Not feeling guilty.
Yeah, you can't be everything
if he's doing
to everybody.
It the other way, with children and parenting and trying to work that out, yeah.
And one of the things you've done now, you've come back, settled into life, is you set up something called Club Garraway, haven't you? Tell us about that.
Well, I guess what came out of it was, and you saying about sort of a different kind of attention, maybe when you come out, that a lot of people are coming to me and saying lovely things like you said and about, oh God, I felt like you were flying the flag for our age group. And thought, well, actually, one of the things I loved about being in the camp is that you did form a community of people that were talking about the same thing. There it was, when is food coming? But it might also be about things that are interesting people who do want to reset their life. So I just thought a good way to do it was to have a free club called clubgarraway.com. And some of the things that I'm going to be doing over the next year in terms of seeking out new resources to help me could be shared, and people could have access to go on them and do them as well and take part in it, but also hear from other people more about what they've learned. I feel that I am quite ignorant actually about the menopause, because I haven't got some of the obvious symptoms that for years people have told you to look out for, like all hot sweats and stuff. Now, you hear the words, don't you?
Yeah.
But actually, I don't think you're particularly aware of it. So I'm interested, because I'm now talking to people about some of the things you can do when you haven't got obvious symptoms that make you healthier. But I don't want to make it all about the menopause, because I think that's a negative thing. I think there's, well,
it's a tiny part.
It's a tiny part of midlife, our time of life. Shouldn't be a negative thing, but I think it feels like one of the things we don't want to have when we're midlife.
No.
And actually, I think there are so many incredible things that we get by being in midlife. Yeah. And actually, we should have more help to deal with the negative things. And so I think we can educate ourselves.
It kind of feels like sometimes to me, and we've talked about this, Trish, that there is something wrong with women. They've got the menopause.
It's a like condition.
Terrible condition that we've got. But actually, it's a very small part of that kind of 20 up to
but
20
it can
year
really
journey.
Dominate your life if it does. Yes. If you don't understand it, if you're not getting, if you need help and you're not getting help for it.
Exactly. And also we are a huge bunch of lab rats, our generation, because, you know, for the millennia, most women have not lived long to go through the menopause. Yes. So we are learning, aren't we, how to deal with it and to live through it and live longer in a way that previous generations have never had the luxury of doing.
So what next for you? What's your next big giant adventure? What are you going to jump out
next big giant adventure? Well, the boss of ITV asked me if I fancied dancing on ice. So I don't know about that, because I feel like...
break every bone in your body.
Exactly. Exactly. Like dancing on ice in midlife is quite challenging. I've got a few coming up professionally this year, which I can't really talk about. And I've certainly got some personal ones. But I think my big campaign is clubgaroway.com. And my big call is one of the things I was mocked about in the jungle is asking lots of questions.
Your actual job.
Doing my job in a way, although maybe my job comes out of my personality in liking to ask lots of questions. And I think one of the things we lose as we get older is the natural curiosity of youth. Yes. And we need to really unleash that on the world. Because I think the curiosity of midlife will actually cure a lot of what is wrong. And I think one of the first things that goes when people feel mentally unwell is their lack of interest in curiosity. They go in and in and on themselves. So I think having more curiosity about ourselves, more curiosity about the world around us. And I've got lots of ideas of how we can do that as women in midlife.
Brilliant. Well, we've run out of time. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming.
Thank you. Thank you too.
And thank
Brilliant
you.
Brilliant what you're
so
doing,
much.
I think.
You've been really inspiring. Really
well, you are. And I think what you're doing is, because I think we have been ignored by society for a long time in life. And very often what women say is, I've often thought for years there are wonderful campaigns for all sorts of things, thank goodness, like mental health and look campaigns for the elderly. But there is no campaign for midlife. And I think what you're doing is great. But very often we blame society, don't we? And actually, I think what we should be doing and what you're doing is the whole Mahatma Gandhi thing where you say, be the change you want to see, and you're doing it right now, and so all of you.
Well, thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was a fun afternoon, wasn't it, Trish? It was so nice meeting people who've become fans of Postcards from Midlife, because we haven't seen anyone in real life, so that was really lovely.
Yeah, but we've had lots of lovely, lovely comments.
Yes, we have.
Shall we read some of them out?
Yeah, do you know what? This one really, really made me laugh. This was by a man.
Oh.
He said he absolutely loved it. A female podcast which men can't resist listening to. Rob BW left that message. Husbands and boyfriends, he said, do yourselves a favour and recommend this to your wives, girlfriends and your daughters.
And I'm liking this one, very short and succinct, from somebody called Mandy Ann Patrick. Says, the podcast I've been waiting for all my midlife. Absolutely love it. Oh, nice.
Yes, and we did have some questions on the website as well. We have a Postcards from Midlife website where you can leave comments and questions. We've got Jacqueline Immins, or Blondie Jacks, as she's called, saying, loving this podcast, informative and funny at the same time. Menopause is really confusing in terms of information and suddenly highlighted my age when I never felt old before and I'm 50.
Very, very uplifting. Made my day reading those.
Now, the other thing we wanted to talk about today is sibling rivalry, which is not joyous in any way. We find it quite hard in our family because there's four of them and three girls and a boy. So there's an almost constant, am I your favourite, between. Mm-hmm. And there are many, many fractious, fiery moments that we all get drawn into. There was a figure, wasn't there, Trish, that siblings under seven can have 3 to 7 arguments every hour.
And
I think it's pretty much the same with teenagers.
Hour. I mean, can you imagine? It is exhausting, isn't it? It is quite exhausting.
It's heartbreaking because you want to love them all the same. You do love them all the same, but you can't possibly give them all the same attention. It's
physically.
Well,
they're all different, aren't they? They have different needs. They're all different. So having twins, obviously, has been interesting sort of observing them, because everyone's like, oh, do they get on really well because they're twins? Yeah, and I'm like, no, they absolutely want to kill each other half the time. But I remember, I was thinking about this, I remember the very first moment of this sibling rivalry coming to life. And they were probably about one. And we were actually on holiday in France, and we had one of these little fold-up buggies that you know, you kind of travel with.
And the ones that trap your fingers unexpectedly, make you swear out loud.
And we were just pushing, you know, down a street in Bordeaux or somewhere really nice. And my daughter literally leant across, grabbed her brother's little chubby arm and took a massive chunk out of it. And we were so stunned. And it was like, that was the moment.
Shocking, isn't it, when you see that? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. With four, can there be three-way squabbles? Can there be four-way squabbles? Or is it usually two, one-on-one?
No, there can be three-way. That often involves a remote control, the TV. Okay. Somebody's changed. What I find is the argument's probably not about whatever the argument's about. It's probably about something a bit deeper or something else that has happened.
Kind of delving into the psychology of it a bit. I mean, I think all the experts say it's just inevitable. It's about getting attention and exerting power, but it's also part of a kind of developmental and social learning, apparently.
Yes.
So it's on-the-job training to how to kind of live and work with other people and how to live and work with annoying people. That it's interesting, the rivalry, it sparks such intense emotions, rage and jealousy and resentment.
Sometimes violence.
And physical violence. Yeah. And I suppose they do have to, it's a very kind of, you know, hothouse way of dealing with all of that, isn't it?
There's a really good psychologist or therapist, family therapist called Jean-Claude Chalmers, who's got a great website. I think it's called How to Be a Better Parent, if you just Google it. And he makes the really good point, which we hadn't taken into account because there are four of them, that often when you argue, you label one. This one's the noisy one, this one's the... And that's a really dangerous and emotionally tricky thing to do with a child, because then they behave to the label, they act up to the label. So you should absolutely never do that. And then the child that sits back, he says, and I've listened to him on a couple of podcasts, and doesn't say anything, perhaps isn't involved, is perhaps the one that actually needs a lot more attention than the child that's learnt to get negative attention, all attention being attention. And you might need to work out how much time you spend with that child compared to the other child. You have to take it bit by bit. You have to be incredibly diplomatic, I think.
Mm. Oh, it's like a peacekeeping mission, isn't it?
It is. Do you find, Trish, I find my husband is very non-confrontational. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really like arguing at all. He particularly doesn't like noise or loudness. God knows why he married me. So he will feel very uncomfortable and try to solve every situation to its best ability. I will try to let them play it out between them.
They do need to do that, I think. I think they need to play it out between them, because they need to learn to resolve the conflict themselves. And, you know, to your point about the different needs of each child, a website that I was looking at called Positive Parenting Solutions, they recommend trying to give each child 10 to 15 minutes a day of positive parental attention. So doing something that they want to do, or watching a TV program, but it's stuff that is their agenda, stuff that they would like to do with you. But I was working out for you, that's like at least an hour of your day.
It's quite time consuming.
Yeah.
You just have to look for pockets. So if one of them, I like to wait for one of them to wander off somewhere, and then I will try and move in and spend some time if they're separate from the other ones. Often, sometimes you're just chatting to the youngest one in the toilet for a bit, because, you know, they're in there a lot more than the other ones. There's a really lovely phrase: you're not dividing your love, you're multiplying it across your children.
That's so which nice,
I always think, I'm not dividing it so that you each have equal time. I'm adding more and more for you.
Yeah, and I think it is about them being afraid that your love's going to be taken away from them and given to the other child, which is... Obviously, I've got siblings. I've got a sister who's a year older than me. We did a lot of fighting. When we were growing up. But interestingly, she has an only child, so she doesn't have... And seeing her experience of parenting, where there's no rows and there's no squabbles, because it's just...
quieter.
It's just, my lovely niece. So she's had a very different parenting experience of it to kind of what I have had.
Sometimes
tearing
I hide.
Out of each other. Oh, hide
I
from...
hear it kick off and I go into the bathroom and I just quietly lock the door. They'll find me and say, come downstairs and tell him off. Tell her off. Tell him off. And I always say, well, I haven't witnessed it. I haven't seen it. If this was a court of law, I would not be able to tell him off, because I've not been able to, it's usually him, tell him off. It's quite difficult not to get drawn into it. Mm. We take them out separately to keep, just to keep the peace.
Keep the peace.
Keep the peace.
House. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Now, Trish, something that has changed our lives recently is something we did together, isn't it? Was our appearance on live radio. I mean, who would want us on live radio?
Well, Chris Evans did.
Yes.
On his Virgin Breakfast show.
So it's so funny because when you think back to TGI Fridays that he used to present, I think I was in the audience once on that through one of my journalism jobs. But I kind of expected him to be exactly like that. And then I realised when I walked in the room that we've all grown up and we're all in our 50s and we're all much, much older and
he's
more mature.
He's very philosophical these days, isn't he? He's very sort of positive mindset. He's meditating. He's doing all those kind of things.
He's running 2 hours a day.
He's doing a marathon, I think, isn't he?
He's doing loads of them. There was something about Chris that you loved.
Well,
Trish.
Exactly.
I could see you quizzing him.
It was only at the end when we got up to leave.
Touching a famous person.
we had a photo taken with him for the old social media, as you do. And I was quite surprised. He popped out from behind the recording desk and he was wearing those, you know, those kind of foot glove
barefoot
things.
Runners.
Is that what they're called?
I think they are.
Could
see
it with his toes, you know, little individual things. Yep. Which looked quite strange with his outfit.
I was just thinking about the putting on and taking off of them.
Oh, fiddly.
Oh, it's like a wetsuit.
Exactly, quite fiddly. But anyway, wasn't expecting that, for sure. But no, it was really fun.
So tell me a bit about your nostalgia noodling this week.
Well, I was watching an episode of Cold Feet, still a fan, and there was a scene in which they were pulling out some old clothes or something and they mentioned CNA. They'd found a jumper from CNA. Do you remember CNA?
Man at CNA.
Well, I had a Saturday job.
Men at CNA was your Saturday
job. It wasn't. It was the women's changing rooms was on. But yeah, I used to have a Saturday job at CNA and I had to wear a very strange sort of tabard. Actually, you know what? It wasn't a tabard. Is it a bolero? Bolero.
Like,
you know
those bolero.
Funny little waistcoaty thing. Sort of nylon.
I just think of Torvald and Dean when you say bolero.
Anyway,
my nostalgia noodling.
CNA. Those are the days.
I've got a very melancholy, poignant nostalgia noodling. I was doing some tidying up, as you do over weekend, especially when there's stormy weather on. And I found a rolled up T-shirt in one of the suitcases where we put things that we got nowhere else to put. And I unraveled it and it made me cry because it was the T-shirt. It was a Rip Curl Surf T-shirt. It's enormous. I thought, why have I got an extra large man's size T-shirt? How ridiculous. It was the T-shirt I was wearing when I was in labour with my first
child.
Yeah. So 18 years ago. And I had, you know that thing where they say, stay at home until you're in so much pain you think you're going to die. Don't come anywhere near us. I was in that stage for about, seemed like 400 hours for a couple of overnight, basically all afternoon, overnight, and all the next sort of morning. And I must have kept that T-shirt because it was such a sort of nostalgic, poignant memory.
Are you going to still keep it?
Might go framed, Trish, put on the wall, have her put it up in her bedroom
for her 21st birthday.
This before you came out of me.
Yes. So what I've been trying this week, actually, I try every week because I have a weekly delivery. The, you know, those sort of organic veg boxes. And I'm going to have to name check this one.
I don't know what she's talking about. Imagine having vegetables in a box.
Oh, I love them. Riverford Organic Farmers. And the thing that I love about this is you get a little newsletter from the guy who runs the business called Guy Singh Watson. And he's just so insightful and thoughtful. Writes you little stories and little kind of bits of news about that really kind of connects you to the food that you're buying and the farming industry and food production industry as a whole. So you kind of learn something. You feel really connected to this butternut squash that you've just bought. And in fact, he's just been...
You've named it, adopted it.
Oh my God, it's just so glamorous. But he was just talking about his 19th century cattle barn and storing butternut squash. Oh. Imagine getting excited about that, but I do.
You are a thoughtful person,
I look
Trish.
Forward to it every week. It's so sweet. Got a recipe for cauliflower kimchi on the back of my...
You know we can stick that.
It's fermented. You should bloody like
kimchi.
It. Cauliflower
kimchi.
You should like it.
Oh my God.
Thank you very much for listening to Postcards from Midlife today.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please do rate and review it. We're really keen to get women sharing this important topic and life stage. So we'd love you to help us do that.
Well, we can't wait to talk to you all again next week. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.